Hey, it's Melvin. Before we jump into today's podcast session, just wanted to take a moment to thank the team over at Alma for supporting today's podcast session. If I ever went back into private practice, to be honest, I'd think less about squeezing in more clients and more about building the systems within that practice that actually supports the life that I want to live. As you know, when you're in private practice, it's rarely about just seeing clients. It's all of the other administrative things that often consume the most time. In fact, after now 11 years of building STC, I've learned that sustainability isn't just about the work that you do, it's how you go about doing it. That is why I'd seriously consider partnering with Alma. They help you confidently accept insurance, and their all-in-one EHR simplifies everything from scheduling to documentation to the most important thing, which is getting paid on a timely manner. You can learn more and check it out over at sellingthecouch.com/Alma. And if you go through that link, STC listeners get 2 months absolutely free so that you can see if it makes sense for your practice. That's over at sellingthecouch.com/Alma. Hello, hello. Welcome to today's session of Selling the Couch. I hope you're doing well, having an incredible day. So today's podcast topic is titled Making Peace with Your Becoming, with Your Next Becoming, Navigating Brand Evolution as a Therapist. It's a lot of words, but practically what we're talking about is how do we navigate the tension that so many of us feel as we evolve in our careers, as we evolve in our private practices, and as we evolve in our businesses. My guest today is my friend TJ Walsh. TJ's website is over at tjwalshcoaching.com. TJ's a fellow colleague, a clinician, a friend who happens to actually also live in Philadelphia, which has been really wonderful. We connected for the first time after the Mental Health Marketing Conference that I was at in Nashville last year. And we've gotten into a regular cadence of phone calls over time. And this podcast conversation was actually inspired by one of those conversations that we were having, as both of us in our own individual journeys are and have navigated various transitions. You know, for me personally, right now, what I'm really navigating is this tension between selling the couch and Quiet Builder. As you may know, about a year and a half ago, I've been wanting to get back into some sort of clinical work, or at least use my clinical skill set in a different way. I thought private practice and traditional private practice was sort of that entry point, but I realized that between my wife going back into the office, having a little young kiddo, having parents that are aging and need more caregiving, and then also some of the legal complexities of needing a separate LLC and a separate bank accounts and all of the stuff, I just didn't think I was wired to be able to navigate that. And that wasn't leading to the life that I wanted. But that desire has been in my heart and it hasn't gone away. And so about a few months ago, if you've been listening, we created a newsletter called Quiet Builder. And so this is a newsletter for those of us that are done sort of chasing things or the hustle and grind kind of culture, but want to design business around the lives that we want to live versus chasing things. And so in this letter, I initially thought it was going to be just a part of Selling the Couch, just a natural extension of Selling the Couch. But I think over these past couple of months, it's become really clear to me that Quiet Builder is going to be its own sort of brand. But I have navigated that tension in real time of one, oh my gosh, like, am I supposed to be the one that's talking about principles of quiet building and all of those things? And then also there is an executive coaching kind of wing of Quiet Builder that is evolving. I still don't have full clarity on what it looks like, but my sense is it's an integration of golf, which I've started to play very frequently, taking weekly lessons, but also executive coaching with a combination of EMDR and brain spotting. And so essentially, potentially what I'm thinking is working with executives on a golf course, because the golf course reveals how people handle stress and adversity, and being able to do brain spotting in real time to address those performance hangups. So it helps them become better golfers, but also become better leaders. But I share all of that because I've really been struggling and navigating like this tension of like, oh my gosh, like this is a whole brand and this is a whole business. And am I supposed to be the one doing this? And is this adding complexity in to a life that I want simple as possible? And TJ's conversations, my conversations with TJ have just been so helpful in navigating this. And so I wanted to share this in real time with you. So we start by this conversation about how branding often gets worked out in real time and why that is, especially for therapists who are in seasons of growth or reinvention, why we need to often hear that. The second thing we talk a lot about is this idea of building the next thing in secret versus building in public. For most of us as clinicians, we say, okay, I want to build a new offer, or I want to build a course, or I want to launch a podcast, and I'm just going to work on it behind the scenes. And then when it's ready, I will put it out there. And we talk through that tension, the pros and cons. We also talk about this framework that TJ's developed called the pushed, pulled, and propelled framework. I think this is a great framework to learn and just to understand. And we wrap up with, what are some expressive or intuitive practices that we can employ even after this conversation to help you navigate the tension that you might feel? So I hope today's conversation is really helpful for you. But here's my conversation with TJ Walsh from tjwalshcoaching.com. Hey, TJ, welcome to Selling the Couch.
Hey, Mel, it's so good to be here. I've been looking forward to our conversation today for a little while, so looking forward to hanging out.
Yeah, I am as well. Before we even jump in, brother, I'm so grateful for you. I'm grateful we're both in Philadelphia, although we got to get together and actually meet up in person. But, you know, TJ and I now, we do a regular kind of phone call just to encourage each other, motivate each other, inspire each other as clinicians. And even this podcast conversation, I think, was a lot of the ideas for it was sprung from things that we're navigating and that we just thought, yeah. and some of those conversations. And so, yeah, I'm more than anything, before we jump in, I'm grateful for you. I'm thankful that we get to, you know, have an open and honest conversation.
Yeah, me too. It's been really helpful and inspiring for me to have those calls with you and get to know you a little bit personally, but also have a space to just bounce things off. And I think that's so important, right? For mm-hmm. folks to have people in their lives where you have that level of accountability and inspiration and just connection, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And the topic we're talking about, I think, specifically relates to that because, you know, I can just speak for myself, and I think your journey is very similar. Right. Although you've had a very unique journey. But, you know, when we start these small businesses, in many ways, like, it is terrifying for most of us to start.
Yeah.
But we never, in some ways, I think there's so much courage to start. And I know for me, there was just always a part of me of like, okay, this is what it's going to look like. And it's kind of going to just stay that way. And because it's already been hard enough to get this going,
I know,
and evolution and all that stuff, right? And but yeah, I mean, you know, personally for me, I think as Quiet Builder really starts to become its own thing, I'm really navigating this journey of like, oh wow, I thought SDC would be my final destination, and maybe it may be more of a stepping stone to other things that I want to do in the world, and but it's so hard. I mean, it's so hard as a clinician to navigate this. Yeah. So grateful, you know, we get to have this chat.
For sure.
This question, I wanted to start here. You've talked about how branding often gets worked out in real time. Why is this especially true for therapists and helpers when we are in seasons of growth or seasons of reinvention?
That's a good question. And I think it's something that folks don't necessarily think about in this kind of way when we talk about branding. Mm-hmm. A lot of people who don't have necessarily that much exposure to what brand development is will think that a brand is something you have to have established prior or right at the time you take off, right, in terms of your business or your visibility. And they think of things like, what is my logo? What is my color? What are my colors? Those are just elements of a brand. When we're talking about branding and how it gets worked out in real time, it's everything else about you, right? So it's the language that you use. It is the niche that you work in. It's the way you enter spaces, the way you show up. It is your energy. It is the story that you tell about yourself, both verbally, written, or non-verbally, energy showing up in spaces, as I said a second ago. And this is especially true for therapists or helpers, because the spaces and the spaces that we go in, the people that we work with, ourselves are constantly changing and morphing and growing. And the work that we do is inherently relational. So we're going to be responding to those relationships organically, right? Mm-hmm. And branding is the same. It grows the same way in response to those dialogues and discoveries. And likewise, we're always evolving in our practice through supervision, through experiences. And so because of that, we shouldn't look to our brand to be static. It should be okay to change and develop over time. So that's why I would say that branding gets worked out in real time. Mm-hmm. And you see that all over the place, even with non-helping brands, right? You see it with products that you purchase. The storyline changes as it ages and matures. So the visuals change, messaging changes. So it's just not one static thing.
Mm. Yeah, I love how you paralleled it to the therapeutic process, right?
Yeah.
I had a question as you were sharing that. What do you think is the reason so many therapists struggle with seeing branding as something that's getting worked out in real time, i.e. there is this underlying thing of like, okay, this is what I envision, and once I get there, I can like show other people, but before that, I gotta like keep it in secret kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a number of things that therapists, psychotherapists, mental health professionals, to be specific, right? That word therapist is poor branding, to be honest, right? Because there's so many different kinds of therapists. So I'm talking primarily about psychotherapists, counselors, who have these challenges. We are taught that we should not be visible. We are taught that we should not allow our essence to show up in spaces publicly or in the room with our clients. And so when they think about what branding means in the way that I'm talking about it, it freaks them out, right? How do I show up when showing up requires me to be a bit more vulnerable, a bit more transparent, when everything that I've been taught or dictated to has been not to do that. And so they get hung up there, right? If I'm going to put myself out there, then clients are going to know too much about me, and then it's going to hinder the therapeutic relationship, yada, yada, yada. And so I'm just not going to do that.
Before we jump back into today's podcast session, if you're in solo private practice, you already know the highs and the lows. 1 month you're full, the next month referrals start to trickle down and slow down. You're juggling therapy and admin and marketing. And if you're private pay, you're constantly wondering where the next client is coming from. If I ever went back into private practice, honestly, I would build a little bit differently. I'd focus less on being everything and more on creating systems that support me and ultimately don't drain me. Because if I do that, then I show up better for my clients and better for my loved ones. That's why, honestly, I'd seriously consider checking out Alma. Alma helps you confidently accept insurance and gives you the tools to simplify your private practice. Scheduling, documentation, getting paid on time, and even continuing education opportunities. You also get access to a network of like-minded clinicians so that you're not building in isolation. Because when we get support for the work that we do, mental health care gets better for everyone. You can learn more about Alma and the awesome work they're doing over at sellingthecouch.com/Alma. And if you go through that link, you get 2 months absolutely free just for STC listeners. That link again is over at sellingthecouch.com/Alma.
The other thing that I see show up for folks who go into this work, and I'm one of them, so I'm not speaking out of turn or in a direction that I know nothing about, because I live this too, is that we tend to be perfectionists, right? Mm-hmm. To use that super clinical word, perfectionism. It's not really a clinical word. We know it as avoidance, right? Actually, perfectionism is avoidance at the end of the day. And unless we are feeling or believing as though our branding or our story is perfect and polished, we're not going to put it out there because it's going to be misinterpreted, or it doesn't actually represent who I am, or it doesn't look as great as I believe it should be. And so I'm just going to avoid putting it out until I reach that that place, wherever that is, and it never shows up. And so we never get around to actually presenting ourselves in the way that we really need to, and at the end of the day, I believe, want to. And so I think those are two reasons why psychotherapists, counselors, social workers tend to hang up on this thing.
Mm. Yeah, that's very fascinating. I think another reason is what I noticed, I mean, me included, I like the idea of thinking about these things and aspiring to them. But then the thought of like actually doing the work and the vulnerability and the courage that it's involved, like broadly speaking for myself, like I much prefer the comfort of like intellectualizing and, you know, brainstorming through something.
Yeah, definitely. I think that I would be in a very similar position to that and many others who are probably listening, if I didn't attend and get my undergraduate degree in fine art, because that process, the creative process, the going to art school experience, forces you to step out of that kind of insulated, let me just be comfortable space. Because in order to get the grades and get the degree, you have to have your work critiqued over and over again. And that's not a really fun experience at first or ever. but it forces you to step outside of yourself and try things and go back and rework them. You learn to edit. You learn to take criticism as simply feedback and data. And it really also, to be honest with you, just creates a thicker skin. And in the world that we live in today, with the way things can go sideways really quickly, out on the internet and in other spaces, parallel to it, you need to have a thick skin, and you need to be able to kind of, you know, sweep away, some of the, more, I guess, direct and harsh language, and just take the pieces of information that you can take so that you can continue to push along in the direction that you're trying to head. So yeah, like you, I would much rather, in my core be like, no, I'm comfortable here. You know, I don't really need to put myself out there in any kind of way that opens me up to critique. I'm quite happy. Thank you. That would be my natural, my natural place. But I've just been, baptized in fire to put stuff out there, get it critiqued, and then, take what is helpful and try again.
What do you think is, you started speaking about it, but what would you say is like a big lesson that you learned in art school that's actually been beneficial for you now in terms of making peace with like your business evolution?
I think it would be similar to what we've already been talking about, which is that this whole thing is a process. This is a never ending project. This is as much about your personal human evolution and development as it is marketing and attracting clients to your practice. I think it's a really beautiful, I mean, I'm weird, I don't know, but I think this exercise of putting parts of yourself out there to be seen and examined is actually a really beautiful thing in a weird way. And that's what art school all those years ago taught me, was that this is a never-ending process. This is a journey. You're going to make crappy things and you're going to make good things, and neither of it really is the end all be all of who you are. And you can always go back and try again, iterate, edit. I think editing has been one of the things that has been really, was really helpful to learn in school. I tend to be somebody who puts, and I still do, but tends to put a lot of stuff out there. And I've had to learn to, you know, edit out what doesn't work and capitalize on what does. So that has been something that I was really taught, that has helped me along the way.
That's cool. I guess the one thing I'm sort of hearing is that process of getting feedback and putting yourself out there, right? It almost helps you separate the product and what you're creating from who you are based on the feedback you get on that product, right? Like, so most therapists will internalize quote unquote like negative feedback, or nobody came to this new offer that I had, or no one signed up. And so now this is a indication of my competence as a therapist, and maybe even like competence as a person. But the more feedback you get to say, hey, that was actually okay. Maybe it was not the offer. Maybe we need to tweak this, or maybe we need to tweak this element. And so you separate, it becomes less about your competence, but more about like iterative tweaks that you can make.
Yes. And I think a lot of what you were saying leads me to say that we need to separate our identity as like my identity as TJ is separate and apart from my identity as like my practice and my work. That is only like a part of who I am. And that's difficult, I think, for a lot of us in this field to understand, because we are the product as well, right? Mm-hmm. Like people are coming to us to get our guidance, our insight, our feedback, our support, right? And so we are the product, and then we also, because of that, really make that our identity. Mm-hmm. and who we are. And a lot of us have had that experience since we were, you know, kids running around, right? We've had something about us that is different, and people have been coming to us in this kind of way for a really long time, and it's all we really know. And, you know, we can debate, you know, what has created that aspect of us all day, you know. But at the end of the day, like, we've been doing this for a long time, and then we formalized it in some way, and then we put it into a business, and before you know it, we're just all kinds of tied up in it. But I think if we're going to become more comfortable in putting ourselves out there and being a bit more exposed, we have to separate our self-identity from our work identities. Because if not, everything is going to be a personalized criticism. And that's not good. That's going to burn you out. That's going to jade you. That's going to make you cynical. It's going to hurt your feelings, and then impact your work with clients. Mm.
Yeah. Love that. I've loved your pushed, pull, propelled framework. Mm. I was wondering if you could like explain that, and particularly like how it shows up for people that are in transition with their business and with their branding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So pushed, pulled, propelled is something that I sometimes talk about with folks who are in this space of kind of trying to either start a business, grow a business, or change move in a different direction. Pushed is what it sounds like. It's discomfort, it's burnout, it's misalignment, and it forces us to admit that, hey, something's not working here, right? So we typically start to feel those burnout symptoms, right? Or experiences, we're tired, we're dreading things, we're thinking about, you know, what we're gonna have for dinner when we are sitting with clients, or when we're doing work that used to light us up. We're feeling uncomfortable with just like where we are day to day. Like nothing is really like sitting well. It's not landing. It's typically, or not typically, it's often just associated with misalignment, lack of attunement, and points to something that's not working. And so what we have to really be aware of those things, and they show up in our body first, right? Before we like really think about it and realize it. So being in tune with your body about where's the discomfort, where's that fatigue, and see if it is something that is misaligned. And then there's a pull, right? As you're being pushed, you're also being pulled. And that is the stuff that is a curiosity, a sense of calling, a desire that is trying to draw you forward. And it's quieter than the push, right? The push is more forceful. The pull is gentler. And oftentimes the pulling is there all along. It's the stuff that you want to do, or have always thought about doing, or have always felt like, hey, like I'm called in this direction, but I don't know how to get there. And that starts to happen that starts to become more apparent as the pushing becomes more forceful, right? Because the pulling starts to get a little stronger as well. And then propelled is when the push and pull integrate, right? So push starts to happen hard. Pulling starts to say, okay, you know, I got to pull you back into alignment, put you someplace else. And then momentum kicks in, and the brand or the leader within you can step forward with energy and clarity. So that can map into some nervous system states as well. Like if we're thinking about, you know, it from that lens, dysregulation, orienting towards safety, and then like a creative flow. So again, pushing, I'm noticing discomfort. I'm noticing misalignment. I'm noticing a lack of attunement. I'm feeling dread, and my body's feeling heavy. But I'm also feeling like I'm trying to be drawn. Something's trying to draw me out. Something's trying to pull me to something different, greater, lighter. And then somewhere along the line, either through conversation that you have, supervision that you have, your own therapy, your own exploration. For me, it's painting, oftentimes intuitive painting, will merge these two things. And over time, the mess of it all will become distilled and more clear, and you find yourself moving in a direction that maybe you always envisioned you would but didn't know how, or something totally unexpected.
So interesting. TJ, our time is like, this is such a good conversation. I can't believe our time is almost over. I wanted to ask you like a final question. What's like one expressive or intuitive practice that can help someone surface what's next, especially when like the strategy part of it isn't quite clear?
Yeah. So we have to get away from thinking too much, right? And find a way to connect with our body, because our body holds the answers. We know that so much, right? Don't we? In like all of our work with clients, that a bottom-up approach is so much so I'm going to tick people off, but a bottom-up approach is often so much more effective than the top-down approach that we're initially taught. And so we have to find a way to our body. And for me, if y'all haven't guessed, it's through creative and artistic expression. And something that I teach is intuitive mark making, intuitive painting. But mark making is typically easier for folks who don't, you know, fancy themselves an artist. So one thing that I encourage folks to do is a simple mark making exercise where you sit down. You don't have any like fancy materials or anything like that. But just like a piece of paper, a pen, crayon, markers, colored pencils, and a piece of paper or sketchbook, and let your body just move before your brain tries to know how. So I typically invite people to put one of those instruments in their non-dominant hand, and check in with your body, take a body scan, and then just start making marks, start moving your hand around the paper until you reach a certain amount of time. I typically say 5, 10, 15 minutes, and you don't lift that instrument. And then you take a break and ask yourself, what is coming up for me? What am I noticing in my body? Is anything shifting? Is anything becoming clearer? Is anything becoming more opaque and less clear? And so that tends to open up a flow. A lot of people are like, well, it doesn't really like answer too much of a question for me. But what it actually does is it opens up space for you to be more free and more open to possibility. And that's what the non-dominant hand is also about. So that's one really simple thing that I offer to folks all of the time. And it tends to get things moving.
That's very cool. I'm like inspired to do this after our time.
Yeah, you should do it. I just did it with a lot of psychoanalysts, and their mind was kind of blown away because they typically don't think in that direction. So
yeah, it was fascinating. Cool. Yeah. TJ, you're doing some pretty awesome stuff in the world. Tell us a little bit about that, like what you offer, and also where can we learn more about the awesome work that you're doing in the world?
Awesome. Thank you so much. So you can go to tjwalshcoaching.com. That is the hub for most things. It links to other stuff. So you can go there. I offer one-on-one coaching for people like we're talking about here, for therapists who are trying to understand what their values, mission, and vision are, what is aligned and life-giving to them. So I do that one-on-one. I also do group work with folks as well. I'm big on supervision, and so I supervise licensed folks through psychodynamic and attachment-oriented frameworks, and we also incorporate creative expression into those experiences. And then also I have a framework called Emotional Alchemy, which I'm building out, and that that takes the residue that we carry on us after working with clients and externalizes it so that we can go back in and do better work. And so I have workshops on emotional alchemy, and you can find more about that at tjwalshcoaching.com.
Awesome. TJ, thank you again for your time. And just really enjoyed our conversation. Have a great rest of your day.
Thanks, Mel. You too.
Hey there, I hope you enjoyed my conversation with TJ, and especially if you're in a season where you sense some sort of evolution in your business, whether it is in private practice and maybe you're thinking about working with a new population, or you're thinking about a new offer, or maybe you're writing a book or thinking about writing a book or a course or a podcast. I hope more than anything that today's session has just been helpful and encouraging for you. I love having conversations like this because, one, I think it helps me to also become more courageous, but I think it's also really helpful when, you know, especially when clinicians have conversations like this and other clinicians can listen in, because I think it normalizes the struggle and the tension that all of us feel. Just on a personal front, I think one thing that I've had to really evolve from, and I think honestly doing a podcast is a direct result of this, because I'm having to get so many reps in where I am, you know, becoming more and more public facing. But I used to fear, fear is not even a strong enough word. Like, I would absolutely be petrified and just frozen by having to take seemingly big actions, to this point where I ended up doing almost 5 or 6 sessions of brain spotting just to get work through some of that fear, because that fear would just cripple me from doing some of the things that I wanted with selling the couch. And so I wanted, one, just to normalize that we all struggle and navigate this. And I love particularly how TJ talked about his pushed, pulled, propelled framework. And again, if you missed it, pushed is this idea of discomfort, burnout, misalignment. Pulled is this idea of stuff that's sparking a curiosity, a calling, a desire. And propelled is that integration of the pushed and pull tension that all of us, we feel, and then where eventually it leads to momentum kicking in and we navigate and push forward in that. I like that framework also because I think for many of us, we feel a push, but we feel the pull, but often the fear that comes after the push actually overwhelms the pull feeling, the curiosity and the desire. And so I think some of these intuitive practices that TJ talks about, I think working with someone like him to be able to unlock and ultimately come from a place of clarity, I think for me, I think that's like the biggest thing that I would encourage you with. TJ's doing some pretty amazing work in the world. You can, again, learn about it over at tjwalshcoaching.com. Have a great rest of your day. I appreciate you and I love you. And I'm so thankful that you took the time to listen. Bye. Hey there, thank you so much for tuning in to today's session. Just wanted to also let you know that we have a free email newsletter that goes out every week. You can download it over at sellingthecouch.com/newsletter. Basically, that newsletter contains some of the stuff that's happening behind the scenes with STC and also with my life and how I'm balancing and trying to balance being both an entrepreneur as well as building a life around my family and my health as well. And it also contains the latest podcast episode and some of the stuff that I'm doing on LinkedIn, some of the strategies and things that are working for me. And then finally, a brand new section called On Mel's Mind, where I take a video or a book or a blog post or something like that that's inspiring me for that week, and I share how I'm implementing it both in my life and in my business. Again, you can download that over at sellingthecouch.com/newsletter. And if you are one of the 3,700 colleagues that have been a part of the email newsletter, I so appreciate you, and I'm grateful for your support. We genuinely try to make these helpful, and just based on the data and based on the feedback we're getting, it seems like we're doing a really good job. So appreciate you, and I hope that you have a great day.